Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Pope Francis was officially inaugurated at the Vatican today in a homily delivered before tens of thousands of Catholic faithful. The Pope vowed to serve the poorest, the weakest, the least important.
He also spoke directly to world leaders when he urged them to protect the environment.
Let us be protectors of creation, protectors of God's plan, inscribed in nature, protectors of one another and of the environment. Let us not allow omens of destruction and death to accompany the advance of this world.
Now, much has been made of the Pope's new style, his common touch, and how his focus on poverty and humility mark a dramatic shift from the magisterial orthodoxy of his predecessor, Pope Benedict.
Much has also been made of the name the new Pope has chosen, Francis, in honor of St. Francis of Assisi. It's the first time in the history of the Catholic Church that a pope has taken that name.
But the Vatican's historical relationship with St. Francis is complicated and not at all as sentimental as recent festivities make it seem. So we thought it was time to take a step back and look at the actual life of Francis of Assisi and what that might tell us about how much Pope Francis's embrace of the poor is maybe window dressing for a papacy in dire need of a PR boost, or how much of it could signal a real shift in the value system of one of the world's largest and richest churches. And here to help us with that is Lawrence Cunningham. He's professor emeritus of theology at Notre Dame and author of a number of books about St. Francis, including Brother Francis, Writings by and About St. Francis of Assisi. Lawrence Cunningham, welcome to Radio Boston.
It's very nice to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you. There's a lot of detail about St. Francis's life that I'd like to explore with you, but I wonder if we might start with a simple question. I mean, Francis was born in the 12th century, and yet it's taken this much time, you know, 900 or so years for a pope to take his name. Why do you think that is?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I actually, before the election of this pope, said to someone that it struck me as odd that no one ever chose the name. Maybe they thought that the name symbolized something that a pope couldn't live up to, but who knows?
Okay, well, let's find out what it is about St. Francis that maybe people thought an actual current pope might not be able to live up to. He was, as we said, born in the 12th century. He was the son of a merchant. Tell us about his young life. What was he like before he began his great spiritual transformation?
Well, I think it's going to come as a great consolation to many parents that he was rather well-to-do, rather well undisciplined, didn't have much in the way of an education, worked a bit with his father, but according to the earliest biographies, was a bit of a hellraiser in his native town of Assisi.
Hmm. And at that time, his hell-raising went along with the fact that there was a lot of war-making going on, right? I mean, wars between the church and heretics, war between various city-states around medieval Italy.
That's right. In fact, Francis himself went to war when he was barely out of his teens against the neighboring city of Perugia. He must not have been much of a soldier because he was captured and held for held as a hostage for ransom, and was almost a year in Perugia before he managed to get back to Assisi.
Hmm.
And when he got back, there was a decided shift in his personality, and it was probably that incident that helped to convince him that he ought to follow a deeper, more spiritual path.
Interesting. But before that, though, I seem to hear you say that there's nothing in his young years, or at least that of which we know, since this was almost a millennium ago, that could have hinted that he would end up going from being, you know, the life of a merchant's son to embracing, you know, a vow of utter poverty.
Yes. Well, I've often said to my students that there's nothing like a little stretch in the penitentiary to get you to focus your attention on the meaning of your life. And he had a year of imprisonment. And a lot of great books have been written by people in prison, beginning with Socrates. So it may be that this caused a shift in the way he saw things.
Interesting. Now, Saint Francis, since now we have the Pope, has long been one of the more popular figures in sort of the church firmament. Many a book has been written about him. And several movies as well. So we've got a clip here from the 1972 film Brother, Son, Sister, Moon. It was directed by Franco Zeffirelli. Exactly. And it starred Graham Faulkner as St. Francis. And in this scene, this is the moment in which he decides to renounce all his material and worldly possessions. And by doing so, very much angers his father. And so his father drags him to Bishop Guido of Assisi for justice. And here's what the bishop tells a young Francis of Assisi.
Is this some damn plot to rob the church of its authority?
Surely you are sufficiently intelligent to understand that Holy Mother Church must punish those who subvert the established order. A man such as you is a menace to society. He's either criminal or...
Or someone seeking the light. Someone in darkness. I was in darkness. But Brother Son illuminated my soul. And now, I can see so clearly, just as you did the day you chose the sacred vestments you are wearing now.
That's from the 1972 film Brother Son, Sister Moon. Lawrence Cunningham, what was it about the simple act of renouncing material possessions and embracing a poverty that Francis said Jesus did that seemed so threatening to the church?
That particular film, which kind of depicted Francis as a sort of a medieval hippie, makes a lot of allowances. We don't know anything about what Bishop Guido said. We do know what Francis said. And actually, the famous fresco of Giotto has Bishop Guido embracing Francis within his episcopal robes. Mm-hmm. And sending him off later to Rome to be to get the permission of the Pope to start this little brotherhood. And Francis had this insight. He heard the gospel read one day in which Jesus says, if you would be perfect, give up everything and come follow me. And he was a kind of a medieval fundamentalist. And he said, okay, that's the secret. That's what I really need to do, to live in poverty voluntarily in order to serve the poor. There's nothing meritorious in being poor if you don't want to be poor, but to pick up this life was, in a sense, to model the example of Jesus.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because I think you've put your finger on one of the first of one of many contradictions in our modern day and maybe popular understanding of St. Francis. Because, you know, as you said, that the film Brother, Son, Sister, Moon seems to show Francis as, you know, this hippie who sort of flaunts, or maybe not directly, but just by virtue of his action, flaunts the power and the material wealth of the church, but that they may not have seen it that way at the time. I mean, do these contradictions sort of continue to go on throughout his life? He was never actually vocally opposed to church hierarchy, wasn't he?
No, he wasn't. In fact, on the contrary, in the few writings we have of Francis, he always says that he wanted his brother to live after the Catholic manner, and he writes that they should be obedient to priests and not to preach if they're asked not to preach. In that sense, he was the real paradox, it seems to me, of his life is that he was at the same time a totally orthodox Catholic of the early 13th century, late 12th century, and at the same time possessed of such charisma that he attracted so many followers during his lifetime.
And very soon after, he declared this new life for himself.
Exactly right.
Well, so I wonder, I mean, and let's take a step back into the present time for a moment, because, I mean, this is exactly one of the questions that I have about the meaning of the current pope taking the name Francis, because St. Francis in the early 13th century, you know, while he was deemed this Catholic radical who embraced poverty, he never even didn't call for any social change. And so, you know, I wonder now with the current Pope Francis, while he's once again re-embracing this idea of supporting the poor, you know, does that mean that we might or might not see calls for social change, you know, in the 21st century?
Well, Pope Francis said to the media a few days ago that he picked the name Francis for two reasons. One was because of the simplicity of his life, and secondly, because he was a peacemaker. We know that Francis, during his lifetime, actually resolved vendettas in various towns in Italy, brought warring families together, and he chose as his motto the little Latin phrase, pax et bonum, which means peace and goodness. And secondly, he wanted to be free of the accoutrements of wealth. He kind of rejected his father's bourgeois mercantile background, etc. And I think the second message that the current pope is sending is that he's going to shave off a little of the gilding of the Baroque forms of Catholicism. He's going to seek a simpler life for himself, for the curia, and then refocus the energies of the church on its social mission. I think he made that quite clear in the public addresses he's given over the past few days.
Yeah. I want to talk to you more about that in just a moment, but let's return to the life of St. Francis of Assisi. Because it's interesting that Francis basically, what, in 1202 or thereabouts, leaves Assisi, goes out into the countryside of Italy, lives a life of poverty, has a big following, as you were saying, very soon thereafter. And all of this is going on at the same time when the church itself was really at a high tide of battling other heretics, other heretical, as they said, movements that challenged the power of the church. And yet they didn't do that with Francis and the Franciscans. Why is that?
There's one way in which Francis was a countersign to the most prominent heretical movement of the day, the so-called Cathars, because the Cathars had a dim, pessimistic view of human creation and materiality and the body and so on, and preached a kind of a Gnostic rejection of the world. And Francis constantly preached of the goodness of the world. He saw the great first sign of God's love for humanity in creation itself, and he had a great reverence for the beauty of the world. And that was a message very in quite contradistinction to what the Cathars taught. The people who actually, and they were exact contemporaries of Francis, who really preached against the Cathars in an organized, vigorous way, were the Dominicans founded by St. Dominic. And in 1218, Dominic and Francis actually met in Assisi. Hmm. But his idea was to have itinerant preachers in the towns and villages and cities, first in Italy and then throughout the known world. They were aggressively missionaries.
Hmm. I wonder, the church itself ultimately created an order. They created the Franciscan order. Was that something that Francis himself actually wanted?
Well, there's been a lot of dispute about that. Originally in the documents, the friars lived as a kind of a simple community and a very loose, under a very loose rule, which we no longer possess, the rule that Francis presented to Pope Innocent III. And later in 1223, they actually did authorize with papal authority a rule of life for the Franciscans. And that was rather new because up to this time, it was expected that religious orders would follow the already established rules, like the monks, the rule of St. Benedict. The Dominicans chose the rule of St. Augustine. So the Franciscan order was new in the sense that they were allowed to adopt a new rule of life, mm-hmm. which they did in 1223.
Well,
by that time, Francis was no longer the head of the Franciscan order.
Yeah, so even within his life, the sort of center of gravity of the order's way of living sort of shifted away from his original vision. I mean, there are other authors of biographies of Francis who say that the church ended up, quote unquote, distorting Francis's original vision. Do you agree with that?
Well, that's a huge discussion that has been going on for over 100 years. To what degree were Francis' intentions observed and not observed? But if I may just add, that happens quite frequently. I mean, you have a charismatic leader, and his leadership oftentimes then shifts into some kind of an organization. So charism becomes institution. You see that all the time. No one's been able to duplicate the charism, say, of a Martin Luther King Jr.
Mm-hmm.
That's a well-known sociological fact.
Yeah, we have just about a minute to go, literally about 60 seconds, and I wonder if we can sort of try to again step back into today. And my question for you is, it seems almost ironic now that the Pope of one of the world's largest and richest religious organizations in the world has taken the name of a man who preached and lived a life of abject poverty and humility. So do you think that am I being too harsh in saying that maybe we're applying too much sentimentality to the Pope's choosing of the name Francis?
No, there's an old Latin saying, nomen omen. A name is an omen. And I think that the current Pope chose that name to indicate some of the things that are going to be priorities of this church, which is rich in goods in a way, but still runs an annual deficit in the Vatican.
Hmm. Well, Lawrence Cunningham is Professor Emeritus in the Theology Department at Notre Dame University. He's the author of numerous works on the life of St. Francis of Assisi, including Brother Francis, Writings by and About St. Francis of Assisi, and Francis of Assisi Performing the Gospel of Life. Lawrence Cunningham, thank you so much for your time today.
It was wonderful being with you.
Coming up, stay with us, the story of the Taza Chocolate Factory from Somerville. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.